Shalom everyone, welcome. You're listening to The Soul of Israel. This is Shlomo Katz on thelandofisrael.com, on the Land of Israel Network. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Hope this show finds you in a really beautiful place, in your hearts and in your souls. Good morning to my dear friend Rabbi Ari Abramowitz.
Shalom Aleichem Rabbi.
Aleichem Shalom. I'm very, very happy that we have another chance to pour out our hearts, to hear people's hearts, and to tune in to what's going on in the world. I just came back from a really interesting trip out in Colorado. I haven't been in Colorado in many years. It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous out there right now.
And I went. Where were you in Colorado?
Denver. I was in Denver for a few events, and it was really, really special. I met some really, really interesting and warm, very warm people, very warm community I was at. For a performance and a whole Shabbos there. And there's as great as it was, there's never anything remotely close to that feeling of coming back home. It never, ever gets old, ever. And I remember right as we were about to land, and now Delta has this, I guess it's all flights that...
Delta still exists?
Delta and Tower Air.
Okay.
Tower Air doesn't exist, but Delta, yeah. They have this thing, I'm sure you fly as well quite often, but... I think El Al doesn't have this policy, but Delta has this policy. For the last half hour, no one's allowed to come out of their seat before landing for security reasons. And it's very interesting how you just get into this very interesting zone where you prepare yourself to come back and land in the land of Israel. And it never gets old. And so it's just a very special thing of, please God, we're coming back home, we're landing again. And hopefully resettling every time you come back, just resettling and connecting
to
the land. It
makes leaving worthwhile.
Don't tell it to my wife, but yes. On a certain level it does, yeah. So thank you all. I met a bunch of listeners out on the road. It was really special. I forgot his name. Someone beautiful came up with me in the airport at JFK. Listeners of ours from Texas. So please keep on sharing the love. Keep on spreading the good word. And let's jump right into it, because we have a powerful, powerful, powerful portion to sink our teeth into, I think.
This is, for me, a consolation from finishing Bereshit. You know, Genesis is like so rich,
right,
and
right.
Then like here's a tremendous wealth also that you want to hold on to this week and make it 10 days. You know?
Absolutely. These parshas are, you really want a month just for this parsha. And, you know, last week we ended off the parsha by Moshe Rabbeinu telling God, "Lama hare'ota la'am hazeh? Why did you make it so hard for Am Yisrael?" Because this was basically taking place right after Moshe went to Paro, told him what he told him about letting my people go, and things just got much worse.
And that was the question asked this morning, right after the minyan that I went to, that was so uplifting that I had with you. A guy said that. He's like, why does it have to be so hard? Can it be positive psychology? Can't it be empowerment? Why does it have to be so hard? And I guess this question is echoed throughout Jewish history.
Right. Moshe Rabbeinu is asking the question that we're also asking. Lama hare ot lama zeh? Why are you making it so hard for Jews? Look, there were two attempted attacks last night. Although there were attacks, they're attempting to take lives of Jewish people. At bus stops in Judea last night, in Samaria, just last night. Why does it have to be? Why does holding on to the land have to be such a hard thing? Why is it so difficult? Especially when we try to make it better, and it seems like it's almost even harder. And I think that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was asking at the end of the last parsha. He's saying, I went and did a shlichus. I carried on the message from you. And it seems like I made things worse, but... if I believe that everything's from you, then really it's you that made things worse. So how could you make things worse? And a lot of the commentators go very deep into trying to understand Moshe Rabbeinu, the closest that we have to perfection in human beings was embodied through Moshe Rabbeinu. So if he could ask that kind of question, it means that there's something very deep to that type of question. And God tells him, you're asking me that question? Atatir, and now I'm going to show you what it's really all about. Now I'm going to show you what my master plan really, truly is. My plan is not for it to be bad for you. My plan is to get you to a certain situation in life where you choose something that you never chose before. And I wanted to discuss that this morning.
Just a thought that I had when that guy asked it today in your shiur. He said, why does it have to be so hard? And I was thinking, it's like a furnace. Why does a furnace have to be hot to refine, you know, the most precious of metals? And also, why didn't Avraham, you know, he stood up for Sodom and he entered this whole negotiation with Hashem about the people of Sodom. And then Hashem says, your children and grandchildren will enter into a terrible, dark, oppressive slavery. No negotiation.
And he's fine.
And he's fine with that. How is that, dude? For Sodom, he's willing to argue and And because on some level he realized it's what we needed to go through, I think.
Absolutely, it's what he knew with his whole heart and soul. And I think that we also know that we're his children, so we understand somewhere deep down. It's not binat hamoach. It's not the wisdom of the mind. It's what our mystics call binat haliv, the wisdom of the heart. The heart not only knows, it understands that it must go through this type of this polishing that only happens through a fiery furnace in order to extract from it the pure righteousness of the Jewish soul that comes out of such experiences. But when God tells Moshe Rabbeinu in our parsha, at the end of last week's parsha, now you're going to see what I'm really all about. So we get a taste of what the exodus of Egypt was all about, and really what our own personal exodus, please God, today is all about. And that's what we spoke about this morning. You know, as long as you're able to tolerate the places where you're at in life that are contracting and that are really restricting and very difficult for the mind and the soul, but you're able to tolerate it, so as bad as it is, if you're tolerating the badness, the evil, there's nothing that God can take you out of a million Egypts. But you're never out of there. You know, they have that saying, you can take, what is it? You could take the boy out of, I've heard this about Brooklyn, about.
Yeah, it's you can take the X out of the Y, but you can't take the Y out of the X.
Something like that, right? So you could take the Jew out of the Exodus, but to take the Exodus out of the Jew, oh boy.
Out of the exile, you mean? Or out of Mitzrayim?
Sorry, out of the exile, correct. Right. You could take the Jew out of exile, but at removing the concept of galut, of an exiled state of mind out of the Jew, is something that we're still working on.
That's why we needed to take a circuitous 40-year route out of Egypt. Otherwise, they'd want to go back to the slavery they know over the freedom that they don't, which is much more terrifying.
So we were learning this morning that God reveals to Moshe Rabbeinu what's called the Arba Lishonot Shel Geula, the four languages, the four words of redemption. Vehotzeti, vehitzalti, vegaalti, velakachti. Vehotzeti, I will take them out. Vehitzalti, I will save them. Vegaalti, and I will redeem them. Velakachti, and then I'll take them to me. We were learning this morning was something so beautiful based on the teachings of the first Ger Rebbe, the Rebbe Yitzchak Meir of Gur. In Hebrew, the word for suffering and tolerating is the same word. Sevel, lisbol. When you say, I can't stand that person, you say, wala, ani lo sovel oto, I can't stand him. But when you talk about what you're able to endure and tolerate, you could say,
koach sevel.
Exactly. Same word. Interesting. The way we learn the language of redemption is that we've been learning it all these years by saying God will take us out of the suffering, sivlot Mitzrayim. But the Hasidic masters tell us the first level of redemption, the petach hashar, the entrance to the world of redemption, is you coming to the clear notion that there are certain things you're not willing to tolerate anymore. I'm just not willing to take it anymore. But as long as you're able to tolerate and endure it, God can take you out of a million exiles. It won't change where you're at. And I'm thinking about that in terms of our Jewish state of mind today. Are we truly, even though we're back in Israel, are we redeemed yet? What do you think? You think that we still have a galut mentality, an exiled state of mentality?
As a nation as a whole, I think, right, we still have an exile mentality.
What is it that we're able to still tolerate?
The terror being committed against our people is a huge thing. And not only do we tolerate it, I think in some way we cleave to it. This whole Palestinian conflict thing, we're cleaving to it because without it, what are we? You know, but I think that the injustices against us, the world saying that Israel doesn't belong to us, things that we know are justice and truth, we're willing to tolerate people questioning that.
Unbelievable. Why are we able to still tolerate such a thing which we know keeps us in exile? Why do we do that? I don't think we really believe that we could be redeemed. I don't think that we'd know, like you said, if we didn't have that to deal with, to cleave to, then what would we be left with? In other words, we can't imagine a world where those things that enslave us don't exist anymore. We just can't imagine it. And I think, therefore, that God, every time that we read these parshiot, it's very important to remember. We're not just reading the portions to remember what happened. It's God speaking to us today and asking us, are you still willing to tolerate the narrowness of the world? Are you still willing to tolerate the fact that enslavement is a real thing? And as long as you're able to tolerate it as hard as... God's not saying, does it feel good? It feels bad. It feels horrible. It's a horrible thing to live with terror. But have you coped with defense mechanisms which allow you to tolerate? And as long as you're just hiding behind those defense mechanisms which enable you to tolerate the sevel, the pain, you're still stuck. You're really, really, really stuck. So that understanding of God's telling us, I'm going to take you out of the frame of mind where you're going to be able to tolerate Egypt. That's the first level. That's the first level of redemption. You know, it reminds me of a story that the Baal Shem Tov had a student, I think his name was Rav Pinchas. And Rav Pinchas came up to the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement. We're speaking right now mid-18th century in Ukraine. Rav Pinchas said to the Baal Shem Tov, Rebbe, I want a blessing. I want to go to the land of Israel. It was a very long journey back then. It wasn't a simple journey at all. Not everyone made it, and not everyone came back. So the Baal Shem Tov thought about it for a while, and he said to me, you know what? I'm going to give you a blessing on one condition, that you're very, very careful with whatever answer you give to anybody. Be very careful with anything that you're going to say. If you go with that consciousness and that state of mind, you have my blessing to go to the land of Israel. Thank you so much, Rebbe. Amazing. Thank you. He sets out, takes him a while. And this Rav Pinchas comes to the land of Israel and he is flying. He's great. He's doing so, so good. He's enjoying every second and he's pretty conscious and aware of the conversations that he's having with people. He remembers what his Rebbe told him to be very careful. And on his last day, where does he go? He goes to Jerusalem. No, actually, not the last day. But it was one more like the last week because he still had to travel a few days out of Jerusalem to get out back to reach the boat in one of the ports. So on the shore. So he's his last few days in Eretz Yisrael and he's by the Kotel and he's looking at the Kotel and he's crying and he's thinking about how many years Jews have been crying to return back here, and he's looking at the Temple Mount, at what, you know, was once where our holy temples stood in front of our eyes, God's divine presence manifested through such a place, and he's bawling and he's in such an mamish ecstasy. At that moment, someone comes up to him and says to him, hi, shalom aleichem. I could see you're not from here, based on his dress, his attire. Where are you from? He's like, oh, I'm from the Ukraine. Really? How are you guys doing out there? So he says to this person, Baruch Hashem, it's difficult, but we're managing. You know, we're working hard. So holding on tight. And he lifts his eyes, Rav Pinchas, back to the Kotel for a second, and he wants to continue the conversation with this guy that just asked him where he's from, and he turns his eyes away. That guy's gone. The guy that just asked him those two questions is gone. He's wondering what's going on over here. But he didn't think about it that much longer, and he continued his journey. Gets back home. Thank God he made it back in one piece. And the Baal Shem Tov says to him, Pinchas, yes, Rebbe, what did I tell you? Rebbe, I was so careful with everything that I said to anybody. I was very conscious of it. And there was no words were said in vain, no bending of truth. Everything was just real. Pinchas, did you meet anybody in Jerusalem, especially the last few days you were there, that struck a certain conversation with you? Yeah. Many people, but someone specific? He's thinking, did I talk to anybody at the Kotel the last day that I was there? Oh, yes, Rebbe, yeah, there was someone that came up to me. Yes, Pinchas. And he asked me where I'm from and how the Jews of my town are doing. Yes, Pinchas. What did you tell him? I told him, Rebbe, Baruch Hashem, we're doing okay. It's difficult, but we're managing. Pinchas, do you know who that was? That was Eliyahu Hanavi. And he wanted to know if the Jews are ready for Geula. But when he asked you how you're doing in the exile, what did you tell him? It's hard, but we're managing. I told you to be so careful with every word you said. Had you told him, it's so hard, we're not managing. We can't tolerate it anymore. Perhaps the great day would have come. So whenever anyone asks me, how are you doing? How are the Jewish people doing? It might be religiously, politically correct to say, Baruch Hashem, very good.
We're stronger than ever. Yeah.
But you never know. If at that moment it's Eliyahu Navi waiting to hear from you, we cannot tolerate one more moment of not being redeemed. And that's the same story as the first language of redemption in the parasha that we read this Shabbos. I'm going to remove from you the ability to say, we're stronger than ever and we're fine. No, in a world filled with madness and craziness, and what seems to be the removal of emes, of truth in the world, you're not fine. And it doesn't mean you're in that you're in a bad place. It means you're in the most real place in the world if you could recognize that you're able to tolerate such darkness and that's a bad thing. You're already half redeemed person.
And I can't help but to feel that we really are half redeemed, because the things that are happening in Israel that we shouldn't be tolerating, more and more of us are just not able to. There's so much righteous indignation that I feel swelling up. Why? Because there's so much truth coming in now. There's so much redemption that we're already tasting that we have something to contrast it with. And when we see this injustice that we've tolerated for so long without even being aware that there's something else, these little rays of redemptive light coming into the world are illuminating this darkness to a degree where it's intolerable more and more and more.
I wish. I mean, I pray that that's how we look at it, but somehow we're able to still tolerate half a redemption. Isn't that weird? Yeah. Why are we okay with that? Why do we feel like it's a much more religious and holy thing to just be thankful for what you have?
I think a big part of it is a feeling of helplessness that a lot of people have. They're like, what am I going to do about it? You know, like, I see that it's happening. I see how crazy it is. You know, we have these two holy partners in this headquarters that we're building. And one of them was driving from Tekoa to the headquarters. And these 300 high schoolers come out and they're starting to throw rocks, right? And this guy is like a bearded Jew wearing a keffiyeh around his head, like not in the Arab way, but, and he gets out of the, he was just in a mood, I guess, and he just started screaming and ran after them, and they turned around and ran. It was like so crazy, this one, and then the police got there, and there was like damage to all these cars from the stones, and the police said, did anyone pull a gun? That's all they were concerned about. If anyone pulled a gun out, that's what they were concerned with. And there's like, it's so infuriating that we're not even able to defend ourselves, that's what it's about, that I'm feeling this into. But what am I going to do about it? What's anyone going to do about it? I think that there's that feeling of helplessness.
So how do we change the score in this regard? Meaning a person that feels that there's hope might feel that it's worth telling God, I can't tolerate this anymore. And I think that we have to change the game. We have to figure out a way to change the dynamics over here and the language of what it means to be what we call in Hebrew frum. How would you say frum?
Frum, I would say...
don't say Orthodox.
Frum is conscious. Like,
I wish that's what it meant.
you mean the actual denotation, yeah, of what frum means.
Frum is like the proper
meticulous
religious...
Right. In right. The observance of...
The commandments, right? So that's a pretty, pretty detailed explanation. I think that the holiest from way of looking at God and not being, how would you say, kfui tova, in Hebrew, kfui tova means
not recognizing the goodness that is,
right, is to be able to say
ungrateful,
is to be able to say, oh God, I'm so grateful for the good. But I can't tolerate anymore the lack of emes that's in the world.
Can I just ask you to share the tefillah, the prayer that you said we should be praying for? And I was like, that's the prayer I want. That's because sometimes your soul has something that it wants to pray, but it can't find the words.
Right.
And that word, right. You provided words to a feeling that I have often, that now I can have that prayer. And it's not so complex.
Right.
But for some reason, it was so important for me to hear.
It was more or less, correct me if I'm wrong. It was more or less saying to God, Master of the world, I don't even know anymore. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be crying over. And that itself pains me and afflicts me. So please, I'm not even asking you to answer my prayers, but please guide me as to what I should be crying over.
Right. You said, don't let me be okay with the scraps. It was something
right.
about
small mindedness. Yeah. Don't let me be okay with my very contracted, limited concept of redemption on a certain level. You know, redemption is a much greater thing than what we have now. And as redemptive as it feels to be back home in the land of Israel, the point of us being back here is not just that Jews have a good time and it's good for Jewish people. Ve'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz. And all the nations of the world will see ki shem Hashem nikra alinu, that God's name is called out beneath us. Ki beiti beit tefila yikare l'chol ha'amim, like you always mentioned, that my house is a house of prayer for all nations. The revelation of the redemption is not just that us Jewish people won't tolerate small-mindedness. It's that no human being in the world will be able to tolerate such a lack of integrity that exists in the world, that we just can't tolerate it, that we're just sick and tired of it. But the problem is like you said, you know, to be able to ask that from God, even that itself is a prayer. Like, please, God, I'm not even sure what to ask you of, but please let me be sick and tired of my games, of my pettiness, of hiding behind what I think is the real deal, when I really know that I'm so far from a redemptive world, from a redemptive life. And I believe full-heartedly with all my heart and soul that once my prayers are in the right place, once I know what to be crying for, then the path to reaching the place of removing myself from tolerating evil is much more, it just feels like it leads me right there. So I bless you, Ari, I bless myself, and I bless all our listeners with the power of believing in prayer. Believing in prayer. And believing in prayer doesn't mean that I know exactly what I'm praying for. Like we said right now, prayer can be, God, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be praying for. But don't let me think that I've fulfilled my religious observance because I prayed for that which was dictated to me. The Jewish soul needs so much more self-expression. So much more. And we're spiritually constipated because we haven't figured out yet.
Oh, that is the word. Yeah.
Because we haven't figured out a way to express what we're really crying for. What are we really crying for? Stop letting me tolerate Egypt. Please don't allow me to lisbol, to tolerate all the narrowness and the constrictive places that I've kind of designed for myself and I live by. That's what
the
Jewish soul is.
One thing you said
for
this morning that I'm just going to ask you to revisit right now that was so powerful, and one of the keys to redemption, bringing it right now. Because if we bring our own redemption in our own lives, then, and all of Am Yisrael does that, and the whole world does that, and what did you say when we're in Egypt, to understand very that good. we may be slaves, but.
So that was the last shlav of the redemption. V'lakachti etchem li le'am, the Ishbitzer, the Rabbi Yaakov of Ishbitz, explained to us that eventually the last stage of redemption will be that God will show us you were never under anyone's jurisdiction. You were never under anyone. No one ever really enslaved you. It was all me. It's not that like when I come to that realization, now I'm going to be like, God, how could you do that to me? It's that you'll realize that it was me providing you with the opportunity to not just excel, but to surpass any expectation you had for yourself in terms of truly getting your spiritual act together in this world. And that's what's going to be. like you said, like eventually that'll be the consciousness amongst Am Yisrael. And that's what the Torah tells us this Shabbos, this portion, that eventually, v'lakachti etchem li la'am, when you're going to really be mine and you're going to feel like you're mine, you're going to look back at the past and realize no one ever had dominion over you. So if we know that that's how it's going to be one day, why don't I just access the secret of borrowed time and I go to the future? And I go right now and I say, God, I'm so in my Egypt and I can't figure out why I'm so enslaved to that addiction or to that passion or to that person. But clearly there's something that you're trying to tell me through this, because it's really you, even though I can't see that it's really you. But please, while I'm going through this right now, show me and guide me, and please reveal to me that which I'm supposed to be learning from you right now, as I'm going through it right now, so that I could act in a manner that's going to be what's going to, when redemption will show up on our doorstep as well. And it'll be clear to me that it was always you. It was always truly you. But to do that now while you're still in Galus, that's a pretty cool trick. To be what we call a real messianic Jew.
Right. That's a loaded word.
It's a loaded word. And I want to be very clear. I want to clarify what I'm saying. When we're referring to messianic Jews in today's segment, what we're speaking about is people that walk around with a consciousness of what it will be like when Mashiach comes, when Messiah comes, when we'll realize that no one ever had dominion over us, but accessing that already right now before the full redemption has come to the world.
It's what Rav Shlomo Carlebach would call Mashiach eyes.
Absolutely.
Right? Eyes that pierce through the darkness and confusion of this world and see Hashem's hand behind everything. And this may sound cryptic, but on my own journey where I am right now, because I've had a few issues just over the past month that have been very, very difficult. But as the dust settles, I look and I say, what is the message Hashem is sending me to help redeem me from this? Control. I know it may sound cryptic, but it all comes down to trying to control other people, people's responses, situations, events. And when I throw my hands up and say, whatever it is from Hashem, all I need to do is turn my heart to Him and say, help me understand, help me to see the proper way to respond to this, through which I can refine my own character and attributes in exactly the way that I need to. Otherwise, you wouldn't have created this situation if I didn't need to use this exact situation to refine this attribute that I need in order to come closer to you.
You never told me you were a messianic.
I'm sorry you have to find out this way.
I'm honored. Beautiful, Ari. Ashrecha. Praiseworthy are you. Praiseworthy is anyone that's able to have enough. It takes a lot of guts, though, right? To go to that place?
A lot of guts, a lot of consciousness. It's a scary place to be.
It's the most vulnerable place to be in, because what's guarding you, what's shielding you at that moment? Nothing, really.
That's why I think that this whole idea that throughout the Torah, it's kochiva otzem yadia saliyat achayla, is that we're so nervous that always we can fall into this trap of saying, my own hands and the power of my hands have brought this abundance, salvation, success, whatever it is. Because if you say that it's not your own hands and it's in God's hands, that's the ultimate vulnerability.
Right, right. So I bless us all to have enough guts to do it individually, but to remember that all the real spiritual seekers in the world eventually reach this place. There's no shortcuts. You can't not get there unless you're willing to go to that, travel to that zone of being completely open, completely vulnerable, removing all delusional shields that you thought protected you, and you're willing to tell God, and you're willing to understand what it means when you tell God, I'm ready for redemption. It means you're ready to stop tolerating what you thought were all your protective shields that really don't get you anywhere. There are no shortcuts, my dear, dearest brothers and sisters, but just remember that the moment that you come to that realization that this is where you want to be in life, at that moment, it's the least loneliest place in the world. It's actually the most comforting place in the world. And please, God, we'll all get there together with a lot of strength and a lot of might. I would love to continue to keep on hearing from so many of you who wrote me the most tremendous feedbacks from last week's segment regarding the liberation of the mind. Please keep on sharing your thoughts. I share it with others as well, with many of my other students. Shlomo@thelandofisrael.com. You can reach Ari at Ari@thelandofisrael.com. And blessing you all with a redemptive week. Sparks of redemption should truly hover not just above, but also penetrate inside our souls. Shalom.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself. And I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.
Hello, my name is Tommy Waller. I'm the founder and president of HaYovel. More than 12 years ago, I made my first trip to the land of Israel. What I saw and heard changed my life forever. I stood with Nir Levi, an Orthodox Jewish man in his vineyard in Samaria on the Mountain of Blessing. There he opened his Bible and read the prophecy of Jeremiah that said, "You shall yet plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria." We have the opportunity to join Israel as it celebrates the 50th year of the liberation of Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. Come join us as we witness the unveiling of prophecy in the Jubilee year. Come be a part of the biblical narrative. Go to HaYovel.com, that's HaYovel.com, to find out more. And I hope to see you there.